Hey everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. Today, we're very privileged to have with us Ruth Nolan. She's an author, a poet, of course you all know that. And she works on several projects that we're going to get into a little bit. And welcome, Ruth.
Welcome. Hi. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Of course. Thank you.
So, you know, we've talked a lot about you, your work, and we actually did an interview with Marion from the Atlanta Institute, and she had nothing but just all these praises to say about you. And now we finally get to meet you and interview you, and it's such a treat for us. And so we'd like to just hear a little bit about what you're working on right now. Tell us a little bit about your book, No Place for a Puritan, which is a great title, by the way. The only title I could think of that's better is Skip Behind Me, Not Stay There. But maybe I'm a little prejudiced with that. Hey.
Well, I consider myself basically a California writer. I'm a native of California and primarily focusing on the inland areas. Born in San Bernardino, raised in the Mojave Desert, worked as a firefighter for the BLM, doing hotshot helicopter work, and just spent most of my adult life until the last 5 or 6 years just basically wandering out in the desert, metaphorically and literally.
Oh, okay. So there was a famous guy that would wandered out in the desert for a lot of years. A lot of people talk about him. I don't know who he was.
His
name wasn't Joshua, but it was really close.
Yeah, huh? It was Ruth.
Yes, it was Ruth. Yeah, Joshua's younger sister, Ruth.
From the Bible.
Yeah.
So I primarily, I write in all genres. I primarily have been publishing poetry, but I'm making a kind of a leap into prose and feature something known as... It's been coined cultural journalism for KCET Artbound Los Angeles, which is a new project coordinated by KCET in Southern California to feature cultural arts pieces by different writers, journalists, artists, people throughout Central and Southern California.
Yeah, KCET, they're pretty big. I remember, they're always... They always had these really, cool projects going on when I was living in Los Angeles, and they would, I'd always see their magazine articles. And back then, when people had TV guides, there was always stuff about that.
They've totally switched into the online platform blogging, and they are planning to make some of the columns. I'm not sure if mine will be, but they're actually I'm starting a TV series.
Oh, cool!
So they're going to feature shows also. So that's something that I'm kind of really excited about that I just started doing. About my book, No Place for a Puritan, I compiled that because I'm a professor over at College of the Desert near Palm Springs, and I teach there. I focus on desert literature and creative writing, and I wanted my students to have a collected reader of good literary works that were also accessible and, not too hard to read.
Right.
So stuff that just really would come to represent and, show them a little bit about where they live. And so I put this together. This was actually a sort of a sequel to the book Inlandia, which is about Riverside, San Bernardino. And that was tied in with the Inlandia Institute, which you already mentioned.
Right.
And so I offered to do this next book and put this together. And it's gotten a lot of good critical feedback. And the title actually came from a poem, one of the poems in the book.
Oh.
And this poem was written by a man who went to World War II. He was served, came home, and he spent a year wandering in Death Valley. And he wrote this whole book of poetry.
Death Valley.
Can you believe that? And then he went on to become a famous wallpaper designer in San Francisco.
I heard something about
that. So it's really crazy.
I don't mean to take up your train of thought, but now I'd heard something about Death Valley, about how, it doesn't describe the place. It's not a Death Valley. It's just what the settlers coming through on the covered wagons would call it or something like
that. It's fascinating that you say that because I actually have a piece in this book that is the Shoshone Indian Homeland Statement from the Shoshone, Timbisha Shoshone of Death Valley Elder Pauline Estevez. And that tribe had to fight for 50 years just to get tribal recognition. And then some of their lands have been repatriated to them. And so in the piece that I have in this book where she was testifying to Congress about who they are and what their homeland is, she actually says that they don't like the name Death Valley. That's an unfortunate name that was given by the white settlers, the famous story, the William Lewis Manley story. And she said, this is just so classic. She said, all they had to do was ask us where the water was. So doesn't that just put a whole different spin on a lot of
you know, really, but it, the westward it really, movement? It does, history. But I guess it was, you know, I mean, if you're, you know, in extreme heat and you don't know where the water is, I guess it would kind of feel like a death.
It wasn't the hot time of year when they went through there.
Every time is a hot time of year.
Well, I guess if you're from here. But, and they also, the Shoshone call it Tupa'a. It's named after one of the red clays that are in the mountain.
Oh, okay.
So in their view, that actually means place of life. So the Native American name of the place is completely diametrically different to what the Anglo people named it when they came through.
Right, just two different points of view.
Yeah, very vastly different points of view. And I know that just somehow just speaks so much about just cultural differences. And, you know, our country's moving towards sustainable, renewable types of living. And so you think, wow, you know, that people would think about things like that. You know, like, how do you live in a place without, you know, going through it and not really understanding where you're at?
Right. You know, and it, it's, you know, like nowadays, you know, we have, you know, so much technology that, you know, you can live anywhere. You can live on the moon. It doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do that. But back then, you know, a couple hundred years ago, you know, you really had to have your wits about you.
Yeah.
You know, and you had to really be in touch with, you know, nature and,
yeah,
and you know, what's going on. Or you just didn't make it very long.
Right. It was very difficult. But I think Native American people pretty much have had it down. And I think it's really neat that there's a lot of movement towards going back, you know, to renewing a lot of revival and renewal of Native American knowledge and plant usage and culture. I think that's really important for our
survival, basically. No, I've noticed that, you know, and a lot of it, you know, to me, I'm just a simpleton from the Pacific Northwest. I'm just like, you know, yeah, you know, it's like, you know, technology, we've got all this new technology and, you know, all these things. And what they come up with is, yeah, you know what? I think we need to go back to mm-hmm. a simpler time when, because, you know, it obviously worked. You know?
Right. Like the dam removal up here in the Northwest, the removal of dams and the restoration of salmon. You know, there's, I mean, we need more of that, definitely, I think.
So, you know, your book,
mm-hmm.
it's published by Hay Day Books.
Mm-hmm.
Good outfit, really good outfit. And you were mentioning that you were thinking about going into maybe writing something a little more conventional.
Well, the book I've done for Hay Day is it's a collected anthology of pieces from Native American early history to contemporary writers.
Mm-hmm.
It includes, so it's a lot of different writers, and I do have one poem in there. And at this point, I'm aspiring to, I'm working on short stories, maybe a short story collection, and I do have two novel ideas in mind. So,
oh, great.
And they're set in the desert, and I like to sort of think that I'm sort of maybe aspiring to developing a voice that's a little bit of a sensibility between Hunter S. Thompson and Anne Weiss Nin, with a little Jim Morrison thrown in there.
Oh, okay.
So, and maybe some Grace Slick also from the 60s.
Yeah.
So,
I like Grace Slick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I just have some things. I mean, these are desert stories, and they're kind of personal. But I want to sort of bring these things I've experienced, and they're about some very difficult subject matter as well. And I want to portray the difficult subject matter in a way that shows that the desert is still sort of like this healing, you know, influential, transformational source.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of like going to be the main. So I think definitely I'm really a writer of place, that the place really matters a lot. And that's, you know, the place is actually like a character in my stories. And
right.
You I know, don't know why I just kind of thought of that just now, but it's true.
No, it is.
The desert has a voice,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's the, you know, the focal point.
Yeah.
And yeah, we'll be looking forward to that when that comes out. You know, don't give away your ideas.
No, actually, there's two, and I don't even know where to start. But I'm,
you know, while we were sitting there talking about the, you know, the desert, and I was thinking, you know, like, well, you know, I know that you mentioned you were going to, you know, write something different, and the thing that came to my mind was like, wouldn't it be so cool to have like a book where like, somebody either from this time or even a little bit in the future, you know, like that gets transported back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 200, 300 years ago, you know, to the desert and gets to learn all about their culture. See it from their point of view because it's all brand new to them.
So you would be like living in a Native American village site in an oasis. And then, yeah, actually, that's very interesting you say that because I gave that as a writing prompt to some of my college students.
Oh, did you really?
Yes.
I said,
imagine that you're living 300 years ago in a Kuya village.
Uh-huh.
You know, what would be some things that you would really think were different than how you live? You know, in Palm Springs and air conditioners, you know, when it's 118 outside.
Maybe one of my professors had mentioned that to me, you know, who knows, yeah. You know, because obviously stuck in my head.
Right.
So do you prefer writing or teaching?
That's a really good question, because I do both, and it seems like everything I do, it kind of overlaps.
Mm-hmm.
Writing is a lot more private, and it's actually when you're a writer and a teacher, I mean, I think most writer teachers would say this, it can be very difficult to kind of get in a different mode, because teaching is very public, and writing tends to be kind of very inward
right. And
private. So I actually like doing both, you know, and I was talking, you know, to a friend the other day about how I feel that the more I'm stepping into being a writer, now that my daughter's grown up and I raised her as a full-time single mom and a full-time teacher, and just now the last 5 years really pumping it up as a writer. And I just see how my own teaching strategies with my students are now informing my own writing. So it's kind of very interesting to see, oh, you know, I'm actually starting to apply some of my own writing instruction to myself. So I really like doing both. I really love to teach, and I call myself a performance professor because...
But you are.
Yeah, I just get up there and do it, and it's very much like a poetry event. You know, definitely it's grounded in, you know, subject and pedagogy, but I'm also just really making it very, very creative as I go along, and it very much involving, kind of teach in a way where I'm very inclusive of everybody. And what's really rewarding for me is getting, like, kids who've never written a poem in their lives to get up and read poetry.
Well, it's funny you should mention that, because I have never written a poem in my life.
Well, you're going to now that you met me. Get ready.
And I know you're a poet, and, you know, why don't you read us, you know, a poem?
Okay.
And
happy to.
And maybe you can tell us a little bit about it.
I have a poem.
Okay.
It's called Mirage. And all my poems are based on true stories, pretty much, even though they're very surreal.
Uh-huh.
So this one, there's a lot of really, really amazing places in the desert where I've spent time. This one's called Mirage, and it actually is based on a true story that took place at Kelso Sand Dunes, which is in the East Mojave Preserve. My 10-year-old daughter is feeling brave, so we go rock hunting today, exploring far beyond the last dirt road. Just she and I, no dad. We see the sand dunes from miles away, some hallucinogenic scene from the Sahara, camel humps rising from the flat desert floor. My daughter wants to climb them, but there's no sure way to guess how far away they are, no sure measure to tell how tall. I tell her it's not safe to hike mountains, so unstable, hills that shift in light winds. Our boots would fill with sand, and we'd sink like thirsty prospectors, come to find buried treasure, lured by promises of silver and gold, the rattlesnake's hypnotic charms.
Wow, I like that.
Thank you. And yeah,
and you know, I don't, you know, I was often telling Cyrus Emerson, our producer of the show, that he is a poet and he's into poetry, and he's always, you know, talking about it. And I tell him, you know, I can appreciate a good poem when I hear it, you know, but most of the time, you know, I just don't get it, you know?
Well, you know, I have the same experience, and I'm a poetry professor at a college. It's very important to me because I grew up in the desert. You know, I didn't, you know, have the East Coast background or the really steeped in, you know, academic. You know, basically in the desert, you have to make up your own recreation when you live in the middle of nowhere. So it's really important to me, I guess, since I didn't have a lot of guidance as a writer in my younger years. I really want everything I write to be easy to understand. I want it to be really clear and direct. I want people to feel like they're participating in it, even while I may be at the same time I'm kind of touching on some very complicated themes.
Right.
Like, you know, what is a mother and daughter doing out in the middle of nowhere? Where's the dad? You know, then we get into like this idea that maybe this poem is like a search for identity. In the desert, it's like you can see everything you are, and yet you see that there's nothing, that it's just very surreal.
Right.
There's no measure, you know, where's space and time? So
you know,
hopefully my poetry has that quality. Someone, you know, like you that doesn't like to read it can say, oh, I kind of, that was kind of cool.
Well,
you know,
it's not that I don't like to read. I mean, you know, if I hear a poem like your poem, I hear it and I like it, you know, and it's good. But it's at the same time, you know, if I had a book of poetry, I would be, it's not so much that I wouldn't appreciate it. It's just that I would get lost in it. And so in turn, I would get a little frustrated. Okay, I don't get it.
Well,
everyone's getting these deep, dark meanings out of it. And I don't.
Well, poetry is, you know, really the original form of language. You know, when it's the start of civilizations. And, you know, everything was, before we had written language, everything was in poetry. So poetry is really meant to be heard And I think that's been lost in a lot of, you know, public, you know, since the...
You know, that's an excellent point.
And I think that's
why... No one ever really explained it to me like that because I, you know, as I say, I'm like, if I hear it, I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. You know, it's cool. But if I read it, I'm like, eh.
And you know what's funny is writing it and then hearing yourself read it out loud, very different experience also. So I have to really, when I'm writing poetry, I'm reading it out loud. Because then I get lost even in the process of writing it if I don't hear it. It gets more abstract, isn't it? So
yeah, it is. Very interesting. Yeah, it's very interesting. Well, we'll definitely follow your blog and look forward to reading your book when it comes out. I want to tell you it's been a pleasure having you on. And everyone can go to Ruth Nolan's Facebook page. Is it just Ruth Nolan?
Ruth Nolan, yeah.
Okay, Ruth Nolan's on Facebook page and your blog spot.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a link on justimagineinc.com. And we'll be a YouTube video as well. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, we just really enjoyed having you on. And next time you're in the Ashland area, we'd love to have you come back again.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ruth.
Thank you, too.